HD Smartcast. You're listening to a Hindustan Times production brought to you by HD Smartcast.
Hello and welcome to the final episode of 1947, The Road to Indian Independence, a special podcast series presented to you by the Hindustan Times to mark India at 75. The road to Indian independence was long. It was tough. It was marked by moments of political high, interspersed with long periods of political low. But the freedom struggle eventually succeeded, with the British leaving the land that they had no business occupying in the first place. As we look back at the 12 moments that marked this road to independence, with some of the finest experts on different phases of our freedom struggle, it was an educative experience for me, as I hope it was for you. Allow me a personal digression here. I am a Nepali citizen, and that made hosting this series even more special. For while the Indian freedom struggle is a matter of pride for all Indians, it is also a matter of pride for citizens of the region and for those of the global south. It was Indian independence and the struggle for this independence led by the Mahatma that galvanized nationalist anti-colonial struggles across Asia and Africa. From my own country, Nepali Democrats participated in the Indian freedom struggle. They even went to British Indian jails. This was because they were inspired by the Mahatma. This was also because they knew that they could not defeat a British-backed oligarchic setup back at home unless India defeated the British first. 3 years after India gained independence, Nepal succeeded in mounting a revolution against the autocratic Rana rule, a struggle backed by independent India. This is just one example of the wider impact of the freedom struggle. If British India was the defender of oppressive regimes, independent India was a beacon of hope for the freedom-loving peoples of the world. From the anti-apartheid struggle in South Africa to the civil rights movement in the United States, Martin Luther King Jr. and Nelson Mandela's hero was the Mahatma and his mode of non-violent struggle. Indian independence did not just make India free. It opened the doors for freedom in much of Asia and Africa, both from external colonial rule and from internal political and racial discrimination. For me, three features of this period between 1857 and 1947 stood out. The first was the sheer duration, brutality, and deviousness of the colonial power. For two centuries, the East India Company, and then the Crown after 1857, ruled India with the overriding objective of meeting London's political, economic, military, and imperial needs. To do this, the British had to maintain outright control. And in the process of exercising and expanding this control, the British killed Indians. They kept Indians out of decision-making. They created economic structures which impoverished Indians. They systematically divided society. They used Indians for their imperial objectives abroad. They drained India's wealth. And by their very presence as a colonial power, every day they stripped India of its dignity and right to self-rule. We heard from the writer William Dalrymple the extent of violence and repression that the British unleashed in 1857. Dinyar Patel took us through Dadabhai Naroji's work on the drain of wealth and how foreign rule systematically made Indians poor. Turbo Ghosh recounted for us the coercive nature of the British regime and what happened that fateful day in 1919 in Jallianwala Bagh. Aditya Mukherjee explained how the empire undermined civil liberties of Indian citizens at every stage, shedding any pretense of being liberal imperialists. We heard from Srinath Raghavan how the British unleashed a fierce crackdown to quell the Quit India movement. And we learned for how much of the time Indian nationalists often found themselves in British prisons. But locking in leaders did not lock the idea of independence. The idea of independence was getting deeply rooted in the Indian psyche as the years went along. Let no one tell you otherwise. The empire was a deeply violent, deeply exploitative, deeply oppressive enterprise. Violent? Because it used force. Exploitative, because it was solely interested in extracting Indian resources, both human and material, to enrich itself and to maintain the rest of its empire. And oppressive because it attacked human rights of Indians every single day. To me, the second feature that stood out listening to our experts was how so much of the Hindu-Muslim political divide, I'm not talking about the religious divide, but the political divide, is a gift from the empire. We heard from Bashwati Mukherjee and Mridula Mukherjee how it was through a systematic policy of divide and rule that the empire sowed divisions between Hindus and Muslims. The British favored one community at one point, another at another point, and pitted them against each other. They planted the idea of religion-based territorial divisions with the partition of Bengal. They helped create the Muslim League. They institutionalized the creation of separate, religious-based political identities with the separate electorates of 1909. To weaken the Congress's claims of representing the nation, they actively gave a platform to communal outfits. By 1939, as Srinath Raghavan recounted to us, they saw in Muslim League a source of support during the Second World War, an effective weapon to neutralize Congress's nationalist call for independence. They actively encouraged Muhammad Ali Jinnah to come up with, quote-unquote, a constructive proposal. That proposal ended up being the Lahore Resolution of 1940, calling for Pakistan. And through the Quit India movement, even as the British attacked the Congress leadership and workers and suppressed popular uprisings, they encouraged the expansion of the Muslim League organization. And then, in their final years, their exit plan and arbitrarily drawn partition map led to unprecedented killings and displacement of millions, leaving India with a devastating tragedy. Let no one tell you otherwise. While Indian actors, including the Congress, made mistakes, and while there was more than a degree of historical acrimony between the two communities, it was colonial politics and colonial rule that divided this nation and led to partition. It also left India with a Hindu-Muslim divide that the nation is struggling with to this day. But it was in this darkness and gloom that the third feature of this period stood out for me. The brilliance and bravery of Indian nationalists at each step as they encountered failures and setbacks but slowly built the edifice of the freedom struggle. In 1857, Hindus and Muslims, peasants and soldiers, princely rulers and common masses came together to challenge the company. They failed in ending foreign rule, but they succeeded in ending company Raj. The privatization of the empire was over. The mutiny was to offer lessons and remain a reference point throughout the struggle. Rajmohan Gandhi told us that the Mahatma himself studied the mutiny carefully, and this helped frame his own approach to non-violent rather than violent resistance. Then, in 1885, even as India hadn't recovered from the failure of the mutiny, a group of nationalists decided that being what can be termed, in those years, a loyalist opposition to the empire was an effective way to deal with the British. So you get what you can, but you don't challenge them too hard, for an outright victory wasn't possible. This is when the Indian National Congress was formed. But as British divide and rule strategies became obvious, and their unwillingness to cede space to Indians in governance became obvious, a more radical faction within the Congress pushed for extreme methods, from Swadeshi to boycott. And then, in 1915, the Mahatma arrived on the national stage. As Einstein said, generations to come will scarce believe that such a one as this ever in flesh and blood walked upon this earth. And through this series, it was indeed difficult to believe that such a man ever lived. Listening to Rajmohan Gandhi talk about his grandfather's arrival in India, the clarity of his goal, the magnetism of his personality, his unique political philosophy, and the techniques of his mobilization, and his first foray into Champaran, was a reminder of how this great nation was so fortunate to have its greatest son lead its greatest movement. Gandhi's arrival changed the national struggle by democratizing it, bringing in all sections of the people into the mainstream and making politics a mass enterprise. He wasn't afraid of politicizing common people. Many early nationalists were, and the people did not disappoint. Gandhi was to lead three major nationwide mass movements: non-cooperation, civil disobedience, and Quit India. The Gandhian scholar Tridib Suhrud offered to us a masterclass on the Dandi March. None of these movements met their immediate objectives, and some have taken a narrow historical view to question their success on this metric. But all these movements deepened nationalist consciousness in their own ways and brought independence closer. Through all of this, Indian nationalists were tactical, escalating confrontation when possible, finding common ground when necessary. As Arvind Elangovan explained to us, the 1935 Act was one such moment, leading to Congress participation and success in the 1937 elections. But all of it was geared towards the final goal of attaining freedom. There were other streams of the independence movement that challenged the British too. Saugata Bose brought the personal and the political together as he recounted the life and times of his granduncle Netaji Subhash Chandra Bose. Bose may have a contested legacy. Was he right in allying with the Axis powers? Was he right in taking the militarist route? Who was to blame for his fallout with the Congress? But there is no doubt that his movement showed to the British that they could not rely on their armed apparatus anymore. A point reinforced by the naval mutiny of 1946, which Pramod Kapoor recounted to us in great detail. Put it all together, and it's clear that the freedom struggle wasn't a linear story of success. It was marked by many setbacks. It saw doubts about whether independence was possible at all. It saw fierce disagreements on how to achieve it. It witnessed contestation over what freedom would mean for different elements of Indian society and how their interests could be secured. Most famously during the Mahatma Gandhi, Baba Saheb Ambedkar argument of the 1930s. It was marked by debates on when to confront, when to retreat. But through it all, the overall goal was clear. Freedom. And each step, 1857, 1885, 1915, 1919, 1930, 1942, 1946, brought India closer to that goal. It required enormous courage of conviction. It required enormous sacrifice. It required difficult choices. It required judgment. Some decisions worked, others didn't. But India eventually succeeded. Let no one tell you otherwise. India has reason to be proud of its anti-imperialist nationalist legacy led by the Mahatma and the Indian National Congress. It has reason to be proud of all streams of the freedom movement, for they may have come from different ideological positions, but they were united in their goal of winning power for the Indian people and ending foreign rule. This Indian nationalism was inclusive across the religious, caste and gender divide. It was progressive, for it had a vision of socio-economic justice for a new independent India and its free citizens. It was internationalist, for it challenged the British but never descended into hate, and built solidarity and common ground with anti-colonial struggles globally. And it also served as a training ground for generations of Indian leaders as they prepared to take over the mantle of an old civilization, an ancient civilization, and a young nation on August 15th, 1947. India was finally free. Thank you for staying with us through this journey.
This episode of 1947 Road to Indian Independence was conceptualized and hosted by Prashant Jha. It was produced by Deepthi Ahuja. The sound design and editing is by Amrinder Singh. For more updates on this podcast, follow HT Smartcast on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube and LinkedIn. To listen to more such podcasts, log on to htsmartcast.com.
This was a Hindustan Times production brought to you by HT Smartcast.
HT Smartcast.